This time on Weather Brains, we'll talk tropical weather.
I have a feeling that the season will probably explode later than people are expecting.
Brian Peters looks at a tropical system in the Gulf of Mexico.
It looks like it's going to be a bit of a drought buster, but not for us.
And J.B. Elliott has some thoughts on the current hurricane season.
I've got a sneaking suspicion that Dr. Gray and NOAA will tone down their forecast at mid-season when they update it.
A special tribute to the weather brain widely regarded as a legend.
I think J.B. Elliott is the greatest NOAA weather radio broadcaster in the history of NOAA weather radio.
Plus, we make a call to a spot where triple-digit temperatures are an everyday thing. It's 114 there right now?
Yes.
Well, can I just ask you, what's that like?
Hot.
ABC 3340 adds a new webcam along the Gulf Coast. And we take a look at the weather ahead for central Alabama.
On most days, it'll be somewhere between a 2 and 3 chance in 10 of getting a shower or thunderstorm.
That and more coming up. Welcome to Weather Brains, the podcast that's all about weather, put together by a bunch of weather geeks like myself, David Black, and James Spann, lead meteorologist with ABC 3340 in Birmingham. Hello, Mr. Spann.
Mr. Black, how are you?
Doing well, enjoying the rains that we've had the past couple of days. We'll talk about that in a minute, but we want to say hello as well to Brian Peters with us for this show. Brian, you there?
Good evening, David and James.
Hello.
And I'm pleased with the rain as well.
Jason Simpson, howdy.
Hey, hey. My grass is smiling.
Everybody's smiling. Somebody else is smiling this time. It's J.B. Elliott. Mr. Elliott, how are you?
I'm smiling, but I'm upset that Shelby County's hogging all the rain.
Well,
we only got 1/2 inch in all of this over the weekend.
Oh, I'm enjoying my 3 inches there, J.B.
Some people have really gotten soaked, and other folks are just high and dry, which I guess is the typical du jour dealing with summer thunderstorms. Tell you
we
what,
went ahead and had funeral services for my grass yesterday.
Understand.
I don't think I'd classify the convection we've had the last 6 days as being typical, especially those thunderstorms at midnight and 12:30 a.m.
Tell you what, along I-459 today, traffic was pulling over and stopping in the rain that was falling there. Very localized. You know, you go another couple of miles and it's all over and the sun comes back out. But it's just another, I guess, one of those cases where it decides to rain, it opens up. And some folks,
somebody in Vestavia reported 71 hundredths in 20 minutes or something like that.
I can believe that. That sounds plausible for some areas. But it does sound as if a few areas in the listening zone, so to speak, for the ABC 3340 coverage have gotten some decent soaking. It's just real scattered. Is that right?
Let me correct that. That was Cahaba Heights, so 71 hundredths in 25 minutes.
That's a lot of rain.
There's always somebody that's going to be stiffed in one of these situations, David. You know, Birmingham had 3 inches of rain this weekend. Lake Purdy, which is of keen interest because that's a key, you know, water supply for the city. Lake Purdy had well over 2 inches this weekend. And, you know, if you look at the storm totals, most of the state got a good soaking. But I got a nasty email from somebody in Calhoun County, obviously, who was mad. He said, "You bumbling buffoons," as he called us, said it was going to rain this weekend and it only rained like 5 drops at his house. And, you know, so that one guy was mad, but everybody else seemed pretty happy.
But Anniston Airport got 1.26 or 1.46 this afternoon, didn't it?
Yeah, I think this guy's up in Piedmont. And I don't think they got any today, so he's probably just fuming mad. So I hope he's not listening to this.
So we're buffoons and not weather geeks. Is that it?
Well, he really called us bumbling buffoons. So maybe we're bumbling.
Hey, that sounds better.
Geeks.
Sounds musical.
We could try see how that sounds. Welcome to Weather Brains, the podcast of a bunch of bumbling buffoons.
Bumbling buffoons that can't forecast
like
their way out of a paper bag.
Well, we try to be responsive to what our listeners want, and maybe we need to make those changes. Anyway,
you know, if I didn't get a good piece of hate mail, it just wouldn't be a normal day in the weather office.
This is true. Well, tell me, guys, what are our prospects weather-wise for any rains in the coming days? Are we getting back into a summertime pattern, or is it still pretty much that way? And what do you see ahead?
I think J.B. Elliott knows the answer to that, J.B.
No, we're waiting on you.
You are the dean of forecasters in this part of the world, so let's hear it.
That doesn't mean doodling squat in summer weather. It looks like we're getting back into a summer pattern where we'll have some chance every single day for the next 5 to 7 days, and which day has the best chance is hard to pick out, but on most days it'll be somewhere between a 2 in 3 chance in 10 of getting a shower or thunderstorm. I think the good thing about it is that we won't have any more 100 degree and 100 degree plus heat, although I noticed Muscle Shoals crept back up to 95 today.
Well, so what I'm hearing from you guys is if we want the good, prolonged, extensive, wide area coverage rain, we need to wait until, like, what, September? Is that the story?
That's usually the way it works. But I'll say this. It's interesting. If you look at the weather statistics based on the data at the Birmingham airport, you'd think, what's the fuss about dry weather? For the month of July, the total out at the airport is now over 4 inches, David, 4.22. And the surplus for the year is over 5.5 inches. We are 5.66 inches above normal, which brings that question that we've talked about here before: what exactly is a drought? And I don't think there's a right answer. I made a blog post on that and got a lot of response. I think you can look at it from different perspectives. You can look at it in terms of meteorology. You can look at it in terms of agriculture, in terms of socioeconomic impact. And there's no doubt, you know, for the water systems that are really struggling, that it's a drought to them. They call it a level 2 drought. But, you know, in terms of pure meteorology, if you look at that data, what drought, you know? Of course, I know it's not that wet everywhere. It's kind of like a little oasis of water out there.
But, I was just going to add that Mobile is almost 21 inches below normal.
Now, that's a drought.
For the year, since January 1st. They've only had 18 inches. At this time last year, they'd had almost 51.
Yeah, that's a number 3 drought on the scale of 0 to 4, extreme drought, they call it down there. Yeah. And even Huntsville and Montgomery, about minus 10 inches.
Jason Simpson, I got a question for you. You know, James Spann gets all these viewer emails wanting to know about, is it going to rain at my place, etc. You work a shift every day as well, but obviously you have a different audience. Do you get a lot of the same kind of inquiries from folks, or do you kind of find yourself dealing with a different crowd, so to speak?
Well, fortunately, I don't get the hate mail. I think that comes through a station address. It's not addressed to anybody in particular.
Well, James is going to change that right quick then, aren't you?
it's going to go right to my box.
Let me route that to Simpson's mailbox. I'll do that tonight.
The auto forwarder is already turned on.
That's it.
Yeah. Usually the feedback that I get is based on sometimes the forecast. Rarely do I ever get the same kind of just general hate mail. Now, if I make a mistake, I'll be the first to raise my hand and say I made it. And if somebody calls me on a mistake, hey, I'll work with them and figure out why I made that mistake and be sure that I explain what happened. But most of the time, the email that comes into my box is fairly positive about everyone. Of course, most of my stuff comes in with that Pick City stuff now. We do that Pick City umbrella giveaway in the mornings and from Tuscaloosa Toyota, and it's a really cool thing where people send in their name, address, something about their town, and hey, if you want your town highlighted, just send me an email, pickcity@abc3340.com. I'd love to highlight your town.
Yeah, I like that feature.
Well, it's really neat. You learn a lot about the towns. We have a book in the weather office called Place Names of Alabama, and it has some what I would call standard definitions of towns, but some of the stories that I've gotten by email are very good, and most of them have something to do with I love James Spann too at the bottom.
Ooh, yeah, come on.
So I get your positive mail too.
Now the truth comes through. Well, I've got another question to hit all of you guys with, and that is it's been kind of a little more interesting couple of days as far as what's going on in the southwestern Gulf of Mexico. Where do we stand on that with respect to any potential tropical development?
Brian Peters is our tropical meteorologist. He's the TO, that's the tropical officer, so he's got the answer to that.
I thought I was the software officer.
You are. SO. You've got about 15 titles.
Yes.
You get the big bucks.
I can't keep a resume current with James Spann around. He dispenses titles like Carter dispenses liver pills. That's an old one, huh?
Yeah, me and you, the only two guys that understand that saying.
I have no idea what that means.
It's a JB. JB, do you understand that one?
No, that's way over my Havana Junction head.
And we're getting dated now.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it looks like it's too close to land, and it looks like it's going to be a bit of a drought buster, but not for us. I think South Texas has been in a similar or a close boat to what we've been experiencing in terms of dryness. And this could give them some rain, although they did have another system. What was it, back in mid-June, I think it was, that kind of brought them some rain. But they've been kind of dry also. So it doesn't look like it's going to do much.
I do the weather on a radio station in McAllen, Texas. And for those people that don't know, that is...
good old KVMV.
That's it. Awfully close to Brownsville. And we hit the rain pretty hard in our forecast package for the next several days with this thing. And I don't know if it's going to develop into an organized tropical system like Brian says. I think it's going to be a real positive. You know, sometimes tropical systems can be very good. And I think for our friends in the lower valley, this is some rain they really need. And even up in Eagle Pass, we got an affiliate up there, up the river. And I think they'll catch some showers from this. And certainly South Padre Island, that's bad for them because it'll hurt the tourists, you know, this time of the year, I guess. But it looks like a good wet down for much of the Texas coastal plain and the lower Rio Grande. And that lower Rio Grande really needs the water.
And I know, too, it really is just a scorching hot, typically, across the extreme southern valleys of South Texas. Is it not, James? I mean, the folks that listen to you on KVMV there, I suspect, are very accustomed to highs of, what, 100, 101 or something in that range?
Yeah, it depends on if the wind is, you know, coming from the ocean side, they'll be in the low and mid-90s, but it's humid. And then if they get the desert air coming from the west, it can be, you know, way over 100 out there. It just kind of depends. And you go up to Eagle Pass, and that's more desert air, and they easily can get to over 100. So, yeah, they're used to the heat, but it is very dry, and any time they can get a good rain down there, they always appreciate it.
I'll bet. You know, we're starting to get toward the end of July now and into August, and I'm wondering if it would be normal to expect maybe a little bit of a pickup in tropical activity.
Oh, absolutely. August and September, and I would also say maybe the first half of October, are typically the most active period in the hurricane season.
And does that mean, as far as storms that would develop more a little bit closer to us in the Caribbean, or does that talk more about storms that would form further east across eastern Atlantic, Cape Verde Islands? Is there any kind of a typical history that we see there?
I think you're getting into the period where the Cape Verde storm, you don't usually get Cape Verde storms early in the season and late in the season. They tend to be in the midterm, August, September kind of time frame, or possibly early October. So we are getting into that, although if you look back out over the tropics, the last time I looked at a satellite image, you know, there's just not a lot of very organized waves out there, like, you know, cloudiness or areas of disturbed weather. So kind of interesting that it's been so quiet after such a humongous season that we had last year.
I'd like to throw something out there, though. The Southern Oscillation Index, the SOI, typically you look at that to see if there's an El Nino going on or a La Nina. Right now it's in its negative phase. And if you look at the sea surface temperatures there over the equatorial Pacific, the water is fairly warm, which is indicating at least a trend toward a weak El Nino. Now, typically when we have El Nino years, that usually means a quieter Atlantic hurricane season based on the average numbers. So it's kind of toying a little bit with the notion of the extremely active season. And I wonder what kind of implications it would have. And this is not me saying that I think that we're going to have a very weak season at all. I wonder what the implications politically would be with all the global warming fodder that's going around. And I don't mean to start a fire, but you think about
it. You start it, buddy. You got to put it out.
I don't have a big enough water hose for that, but you think about all the things that are going on with global warming. You know, what happens if all these billboards that say that the global warming is caused by this person or that person, and it's causing hurricanes to hit Florida and Louisiana? Well, if no hurricanes hit this year, which is a very small likelihood, very, very tiny chance that would ever happen. But if it did, what would happen? Where do you go from there? What do you say when you've hyped the hurricane season all year, and if nothing happened, of course you count your blessings. You say nothing big happened this year, but
a new ice age.
Yeah, there you go. Let's go from one extreme to the other.
I'm pretty convinced that someone will be able to find a reason to blame anything that happens on AGW. Anybody remember AGW? Anthropogenic global warming. That was
wow.
That was the term used by one of our recent Weather Brains guests.
Big words.
Yeah, but what it's really referring to is man-made global warming.
I've got a sneaking suspicion that Dr. Gray and NOAA will tone down their forecast at mid-season when they update it.
Really? Interesting.
Why so, JB?
Sir?
Why do you think that, JB, just out of curiosity?
I don't have any real scientific reason. I just feel that way.
Well,
I just feel like it's...
He predicted, you know, still a very... Dr. Gray predicted a very active season, though not as active as last year. So are a lot of folks just looking at what's happened this year and saying, well, it's a dead year compared? I mean, are they just doing something like that and you know, just kind of taking this to an extreme?
It's way, way too early to call it a dead year. Wasn't it just a few years ago that it cranked up at midseason and went crazy?
Yeah.
In 2004. We didn't even have Alex until, what, August or September? In 04? Is that correct? Am I thinking of the right storm?
Ivan formed, what, September the 3rd?
Right, so it was August.
The 16th, so it must have been August. Yeah,
yeah, it was August. Yeah, I may be thinking of 03. One of those years, it didn't get started until really late toward the peak. And that was the first storm, the first named storm.
I think you could say with some degree of confidence that since we haven't had but only two named storms so far, that we're certainly not probably going to see a record just simply because we're already 2 months into the season, or almost 2 months into the season. So, you know, you've lost a period of time. Where were we last year? I'm trying to remember. We'd had Dennis, I remember. Had we
already were on Emily by now.
Yeah, okay. Was Emily about this time frame?
Yeah, Emily was. Emily surpassed Dennis for the strongest hurricane ever in the month of July on record.
That's right.
And that was, I believe, this week or last week. And we may have had one or two more going on out there.
But what's to say, guys, that in the next 3 or 4 weeks, we might have a week or two where two or three storms suddenly form within days of each other?
I would think that's a relatively high probability when you get to the latter part of August and into September.
Because I remember the satellite pictures that you'd be able to look at three storms in one picture, just pointing to each of them. So, I feel like we could still see my guess is that we could still just see a whole lot of activity just flare up over a short period of time, and all of a sudden we're in a real active tropical season. So,
I don't know
about the global warming thing.
The reason that I brought that up is just because that's something that interests me, because I can sit here and look at the numbers from the Australian Bureau of Meteorology, and the SOI, the 30-day running average right now is at, I believe, -9.22, and that's pretty significant. That's low for an SOI in a year that you're not supposed to be having an El Nino. Just food for thought. I'm not going to put my theories against the National Hurricane Center or Dr. Gray at all.
Jason is poo-pooing the season here.
Well, who wants to go out on a limb here and just make the first the prediction of the first storm in the Gulf? Anybody want to do that?
James Spann. I think James Spann needs to go out on that limb.
Oh, boy. You know, if they named this thing, I don't think this thing we've got now is going to have a chance because so much of the circulation is over land. I don't know.
I agree with you.
Let's don't even go there. So I don't want to guess. I have a feeling that the season will probably explode later than people are expecting. I wouldn't be surprised if it's September before things really get busy, but I do think they will pick up. We just have to be patient.
Well, it's interesting to note the National Hurricane Center's climatology for the Atlantic states, and I'm looking at their webpage here, named systems, the average for the first one is July 11th. Okay, we've had two. The average for having had two storms is August the 8th.
So we're really not
so
behind the
really
curve here.
Behind normal. As a matter of fact, we've just had Beryl, so we're a little ahead of the number two storm. We're a little ahead.
Did you hear how Brian said that, Beryl? That's the
right
way.
Is that not right?
No, that is right.
Oh, okay.
Most people say it wrong. I was going to give you an attaboy. I say it wrong all the time just because I don't know.
Well, I have a lot of trouble with being in Caribbean, so I do it both ways, so I'm right half the time.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but just an attaboy. That was good.
Well, and the average for the third storm is August 21st. For the fourth is only 9 days later, August 30th. So I would say, you know, we're probably not headed for a remarkable record season, but we're still in the ballpark for being above average.
Well, maybe we'll get lucky sometime and hook up with Dr. Gray again.
I think the problem, David, we had such an anomalous year last year.
Right.
we just have to just toss that out. That will probably not happen again for another 50 years. The number of storms, the intensity of storms, the length of the season, just toss that out and kind of get in your head that a normal active hurricane season still doesn't really kick off until August. So we're still early in the game here.
I'm so glad we don't have to possibly fool with the Greek alphabet this year.
Yeah.
Well, there's another interesting graph on the Hurricane Center site that shows the peak. And I don't know exactly how they calculate this, but the peak is September the 10th. Apparently there have been more storms going on or have occurred by September the 10th. And then it begins to fade off, and you're dropping off fairly rapidly to October 20th. It really drops dramatically.
Well, yeah, that September 10th date is one they've been using for a number of years. I don't think that's changed a great deal.
Something tells me you guys will be talking about some named storms before too much longer, maybe just in the next couple of weeks. You never know. Speaking of the tropics and the Gulf Coast, etc., James, you guys at ABC 3340 have unveiled yet another webcam. I want you to tell me about that.
Yeah, this is really cool, David. You know, we had this idea a couple of years ago, and for me, what we're missing in television weather, it's pictures. You know, we've got radar and all of this, good technology, but, you know, this is television. It's about pictures. So we teamed up with a company that developed a system called Stratastation, and it's a company here in our state, in Alabama, and it's a combination of live camera, streaming video on IP, you know, video, and a weather station. And we have deployed, I guess, about 8 of these. And the latest one that went in is down at the Alabama Gulf Coast at Gulf Shores. And it is on top of an 11-story building. For those people that go down there, it's the Phoenix All Suites, which is right just to the east of the public beach in Gulf Shores. There used to be a McDonald's that sat there 20, 25 years ago. And the view is just tremendous. And we've got full control of the camera. And we put the still images on the Internet if you'd like to see them. Go to the ABC 3340 website or even the main website. Just look for SkyCam, and that link should be on there fairly soon. It's not at the second, but it should be within the next couple of days, and you can kind of watch that.
Now, the only thing I wanted to ask you, James, is are there any issues now about Brian making that the bikini cam?
You know, we've had a long talk with Brian, and he promises to keep his finger off the zoom button, so hopefully okay. We won't have a problem with that.
Just wanted to check, because I know you guys have had some issues with Brian, you know, on coastal trips in the past.
Yeah, Old Shoe came in. He says he's going to find some dolphins and sharks out there, and Brian came in and said he's going to find some babes on that thing. So, you know, we had to talk with Brian. It will be interesting to see how that performs during a tropical storm or hurricane if we get one. I hope not for our friends down there, but,
right.
You know, it's got a generator, and it's got, we think it is ready to withstand a significant tropical system, but it's just going to be wonderful to have that date. In fact, today we had a wind gust of 51 miles per hour. A big squall came there through there about 2:30, and we were watching the thing blow in, and again the anemometer up there on the roof recorded a peak of 51 miles per hour, and that'll be fascinating to watch. That we got two more cameras coming online in the next few weeks, so it's been really fun to build that out, and I hope other stations kind of get into this. I know a lot of people listen to this from various parts of the country. You can't go wrong with showing live pictures of tornadoes and severe weather and even nice weather, like a nice sunset, and show smaller towns that rarely ever get on television. So we think it's a wonderful addition to the arsenal we have here.
Well, you guys really have a pretty good chunk of the state covered now from the east side to the west side.
Yeah, in fact, on the 6 o'clock news this evening, I started by showing the live look at the beach and then just immediately switched to the highest point in the state in the mountains, Mount Chehaus. So being able to go from the beach to the mountains, it is just wonderful.
Speaking of Mount Chehaus, watch your privacy up there, guys, because I got spotted up there while James was doing the weather show last week.
Big brother.
You know, yes. Brian just walked in the middle of our shot. It was just amazing. So we interviewed Brian via the SkyCam up on top of Mount Chehaw. And my most important hard-hitting question was, what's on the buffet line over there at the restaurant, you know?
And it sure smelled good. It was chicken, I think.
Brian's been hitting all these different places now.
Now James knows all the barbecue places, but...
JB, you're being strangely quiet.
I'm listening with interest. This is an interesting dialogue.
Well, I want to transition us into something that involves you, Mr. Elliott, because if folks who listen to our podcasts have checked out any of our previous Weather Brains, they already know something. We are proud to have a legend among our ranks. Folks all across Alabama know the name J.B. Elliott pretty well, don't you think, James?
He is the Alabama weather legend.
I agree.
I could go down to the BJCC Civic Center with a full house and shout my name as loud as I could, and maybe three people would know me, David.
But that's a good key point, JB. A lot of folks who don't necessarily know your name do know your voice from your many years of providing updates on NOAA Weather Radio you were working for the National Weather Service.
Which leads me to believe I have a weird voice.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but now a special honor for J.B. Elliott. It comes from Dr. John Knox, an associate research meteorologist and lecturer at the University of Georgia. Dr. Knox has just updated his college-level textbook, Meteorology, Understanding the Atmosphere. Knox paid a visit to J.B. July 24th in Trustful and presented him with an autographed copy of his new book. Pretty cool thing to do. It's Knox's way of recognizing the man he considers a true inspiration. What do you want people to know about J.B. Elliott, and why did you come bring him this book?
I think J.B. Elliott is the greatest NOAA Weather Radio broadcaster in the history of NOAA Weather Radio.
Light rain was increasing some over south central Alabama tonight, but it was still just scattered light rain from eastern Clark County northeast to near Tuskegee.
I grew up listening to him as a child in Birmingham, Alabama. I grew up listening to NOAA Weather Radio, KIH 54, and there was this distinctive voice that was always on that radio station when severe weather happened, and that was J.B. Elliott, as I found out later. And he was really my inspiration for going into meteorology. At the age of five, I got a book on the weather, and I said to everyone in my family, I'm going to be a meteorologist. But it wasn't until really in my teens that I listened to JB every day and was inspired to pursue the weather because of his enthusiasm for it.
Tell me about your book.
My book's called Meteorology, Understanding the Atmosphere, and the second edition just came out, and you can buy it on Amazon if you like. And it is an introductory college weather textbook. So it's the kind of book that you would want to have if you didn't know a lot about the weather but wanted to learn about it. And so as we were writing it, I decided to dedicate the book to two people that really inspired me to pursue a career in meteorology. One of them was a professor of mine, Lyle Horn, at the University of Wisconsin, who always made time for the students, and that's been an inspiration for my career. And the other person's J.B. Elliott.
What is it about J.B. that inspired you?
His enthusiasm, his presence on the radio whenever the weather was interesting. I think all of us know that when we were listening to KIH 54, it really wasn't a severe weather event until JB was there. And the fact that he was always interested in the history of the weather and would always report about the weather across the country regardless of where it happened. For example, today's kids are growing up on the Weather Channel, but the Weather Channel people will tell you that they won't report about big weather events unless it's in a major metro area. But from JB, I learned to appreciate that the weather was interesting even if it happened in Kalispell or Havre, Montana, or wherever it was, or even a little town in Alabama, that the weather was intrinsically important regardless of if it was happening on the rich and famous people or wherever it was. It was still weather, and it was important.
How would you describe JB's dedication to weather reporting?
Maniacal, I think, is probably the best way to put it. I find him everywhere. If I'm looking up pictures of the F5 tornado that hit Smithfield back in 77, there's his name. He was the one taking the pictures. Whenever I was listening to NOAA Weather Radio, again, he always seemed to work two shifts a day. That was my feeling. He worked his regular shift, and then he worked the severe weather shift, which in the 70s and 80s seemed to be just about every day. So his dedication was just over and beyond anything that I've ever encountered anywhere else. And so in my own career as a research scientist at the University of Georgia, I tried to apply that same kind of dedication, especially to my students.
So presenting JB with this signed copy of the book is one way that you have of saying thanks.
Absolutely. I wanted to say thanks to all the people that helped me the most. And so when I look back on it, I thought, what one person really took me from a childhood passion about the weather into a career, and I realized that, especially over those formative years in elementary, middle school, and then high school, it was the constant presence of J.B. Elliott on the radio in Birmingham that really made me feel that that was the right career for me.
For Wednesday, rain and sleet likely, high in the mid-30s. North wind around 10 miles an hour, the chance of precipitation 70%. For Wednesday night, rain and sleet change into snow flurries with a chance of freezing rain, low near 30.
Well, I think John Knox nailed it right on the head there, guys. Whenever severe weather was going on, James, back me up on this, if JB was at the controls at Weather Radio, you knew everything was going to be handled correctly and quickly.
It was going to be okay. You heard that voice, and that's not a knock on anybody else that worked down there. There were some other great people that worked there, but when JB was on that Weather Radio, you know the warnings would be good, timely, and excellent. And I agree, it just brings back fond memories hearing that, and that same voice is the reason so many of us are in this science. So it's a great tribute, and I thought that was a great interview.
Well, good deal. I'm glad that worked out. JB, you gonna thumb through that book?
That is a great book. It's 500 pages long and lavishly illustrated, and I refer to it all the time. In fact, two or three days ago I pulled it down to refresh my knowledge of wet microbursts, because some of that stuff you tend to forget if it doesn't happen very often. That is a great honor, and I deeply appreciate it. I don't feel like I deserve that, but I really appreciate John Knox saying that, and it was great to meet him today for the first time.
Well, I think that's pretty special. Also, I want to switch gears on something else here, guys. You know, we talk about the heat and the lack of rain for folks, but primarily the heat has been a real issue for some folks in the South lately. But, you know, we have our highs in the 90s, but frankly, there are people who would say we don't have it so hot. If you consider places like Bullhead City, Arizona, today's temperatures out there well above 110. So what is it like to live in that kind of heat day after day? Well, I call the folks at a resort out there, a resort called The Lodge on the River. It overlooks the Colorado River and offers skiing, hiking, other recreational activities. The temperature was 114 when I spoke with Stella at the front desk. It's 114 there right now?
Yes.
Well, can I just ask you, what's that like?
Hot.
How do you,
very hot.
How do you deal with it?
We deal with it by going from AC in our building to the car with the AC, and into the stores with AC, or we stay at home.
Have you lived out there a very long time?
I have lived here in Bullhead City for 13 years.
So you're probably used to it, or do you get used to that kind of heat?
You don't get used to it. It gets worse every year.
So what keeps you out there?
I like it during the wintertime.
And I'm looking at your website, and it looks like you guys have a very pretty place.
Yes, we do.
You just have to deal with the heat to enjoy it.
That's right.
What do people do to really avoid getting in trouble, getting too hot when it's that warm out there?
Drink lots of fluids, lots of water.
And you don't spend much time outside, I don't suppose?
No, well, whenever you're on the lake or on the river, then it's nice.
It's really not unusual for it to be 110, 115 in the afternoon out there where you are, is that right?
Not during July and August.
What about overnight lows?
Well, last night I think we were about 98.
98 for the low?
Yes.
Stella, that's warm.
Yes, it is. That's why we live in ACs.
What do you do if you lose air conditioning?
We get it fixed right away.
Are you guys a pretty popular place out there?
Yes, we are.
But people typically, what, stay inside or stay in the water most of the time?
That's correct.
Sounds like you're pretty accustomed to having to deal with it.
Well, when you lived here as long as I have, yes, you are accustomed to it.
So you're looking forward to fall?
Yes, we are.
All right. Well, Stella, thanks for talking with us. Stay cool,
you're
okay?
Welcome. All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I don't think I'd want to live out there if it was 114, 115. Maybe folks get used to that, but I don't know that I would.
But you didn't ask her what the humidity was.
I should have. I didn't. But it's a dry heat.
Well, last week when I filled in for John Olshu, I noticed that Death Valley was 125, but the humidity was 8%.
Wow.
Well, Jason just pulled up Bullhead City, and he said the high was 120 today. Wow.
Goodness gracious. That's unbelievable.
anyway, I just thought we'd kind of get a little sampling of what life is like in other cities. And, you know, all of a sudden, 90s just don't seem so bad to me here when we look at...
I think next week we ought to call South Africa. They've got a brutal cold wave going on now.
That's not a bad idea. We'll see if we can make that happen.
JB, what's that station down in Antarctica you like to pull up all the time?
Vostok. They were 103 below zero yesterday with a wind chill, I believe, of 149 below.
I wonder if there's anybody on a phone there we could talk to.
Oh, yeah, you can get them. There, I think there's some people stay at that research station year-round.
Ah, but that's cold. We do have one email from some WeatherBrains listeners, guys. I thought I would run by you all for some expert response. This is from Stephen and Melissa Pridmore, who write, "We all know that hurricanes lose their strength as they travel over land, but just looking at the storm structure, I've always questioned why the outer bands don't wrap ocean heat back into the storm, even as it pushes over the coastline. Is it possible for this fuel to feed the interior of the storm as, and shortly after, a hurricane makes landfall? Are there any historical hurricanes where such a phenomenon has occurred, or is this even possible?" Anybody want to take a stab at that?
Brian is our tropical officer.
No, I'm not. I knew that was coming.
He's the TO. We've already assigned him the TO for tonight, so go ahead.
Well, this is getting hit cold on this, you know, thinking about this, but I think the real source of the heat for most tropical systems is somewhere near and close to the eye. And so while they do, well, of course, we know they wrap a lot of moisture in, you do see the effects. As a hurricane or tropical storm comes ashore, you do see the effects of dry air often coming, like, say, a storm's coming up into Mobile Bay. You often see the effects of dry air coming off of Texas and Oklahoma and Louisiana coming down into the Gulf and killing off convection around the southwest and southern quadrant of the storm. So, you know, storms do that a little bit, and that's one of the reasons why people, like in Opal, I don't think expected to see hurricane-force winds all the way up to the Tennessee-Alabama line, because the storm did retain its strength a little bit longer, and it could be partially because it was wrapping some of the Gulf moisture into it. But I think it's usually because it's feeding around the center. That's where a lot of the conversion of the heat energy is going on, is around the eye wall.
Very good. Thanks for the response there, Mr. Tropical Officer, and thanks for the email from Stephen and Melissa. And speaking of email, if you'd like to contact us here at WeatherBrains, our address is question@weatherbrains.com. If you want to leave a voicemail on our telephone, that number is 206-339-5482, 206-339-5482. Anything else, guys?
It is great to have Jason with us tonight.
We need to do that more often. Jason, need to bring you in, you know, more frequently.
Hey, it's great to be here. It's just a little bit past my bedtime. Got to get up at 2:30, now 9:15.
So you're heading toward the sack quickly.
As soon as I put this mic down.
I think he's falling asleep on the program here.
I want to say that...
I can never fall asleep in a room with James Spann.
No,
you
yeah.
never do that.
Yeah.
At 6,288 feet on top of Mount Washington, it is 48.4 degrees Fahrenheit as we speak.
What are the winds like up there?
Oh, it's 26 miles an hour, gusting to 31. So it's
that's pretty tame for up there.
Now, I have heard multiple national news outlets today talk about a nationwide heat wave.
Global warming.
You know, you look at that, and you know, over here, Mount Cheehaw, it was like 72 and pouring rain this afternoon. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
And finally, I want to make note that a buffoon, according to Merriam-Webster's online dictionary, is a gross and usually ill-educated or stupid person, as opposed to a geek, who is a person often of an intellectual bent. So we can't be buffoons and geeks at the same time.
Speak
we
for yourself.
We can be a mix.
Yeah, this will be taken up, I'm sure, in future podcasts. Whatever we are, geeks, buffoons, you name it. But in any event, that will take care of our podcast for this one. A reminder that the opinions expressed here on WeatherBrains, whether those of buffoon or geek, are strictly those of the buffoon or geek and are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. For James Spann, Jason Simpson, Brian Peters, and JB Elliott, I'm David Black. Thank you for listening, and we will look forward to talking with you again next time on WeatherBrains. WeatherBrains, copyright 2006, all rights reserved. Adios. All right, guys.
You did it good, David.
Very nice.
Thank you very much. It was fun.
Appreciate it, yo.
Fellow buffoons, you did great. Or geeks, whichever.
Geeks. See you, boys.
See y'all.
Bye. Bye. Bye.